Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. And we are continuing with the My Favorite Workout series. We are coming to you every other week with this, every Friday. Actually, all these are on Friday, but every other week, like I said. And I just can't wait to get into this one. This one was recorded with my friend Mary Johnson from Lift Run Perform. Before we get into it, though, shout out to our presenting sponsor, ASICS. Have you checked out the Metaspeed Sky and Edge Paris yet? I don't know about you, but all the reviews I have seen, both written reviews and from my favorite YouTube running shoe reviewers, have been absolutely phenomenal. These shoes not only are incredibly fast and dynamic, they are the lightest race shoes on the market, period. End of story. 6.5 ounces in a men's size 9, which is insane, which means it's under 6 ounces in a women's size 8, which are the standard, kind of the standard measured models. And I just can't wait to get them on my feet. That is for sure. So go check them out and all of their other offerings at asics.com today. Now let's get into my episode with Mary Johnson. All right, Mary Johnson, welcome back to the show. You've been here several times, but you were actually the first person that I'm interviewing for this brand new series called My Favorite Workout. So I guess, first of all, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Pressure's on if I'm the first.
Well, hey, the pressure's on me, because right, we already know your bona fides. You're fantastic. You'll reiterate those in a second. But I'm really excited, basically, and people have heard this already in the intro, but the whole idea of this is learning about not only coaches' favorite workouts that they'd love to give to their athletes, but also all the little differences between how a workout can change depending on the athlete's fitness, what they're training for, where it falls within a certain cycle of the race that they're training for, and all the other variations that dive into it. So many times we see what people are doing in training, but it's going to be so hard to figure out how some of these workouts may be great for us. So I think this is exactly where this series dives in. So we have two workouts we're going to cover with you, Mary. Where do you want to start? Actually, I should say this. Let's talk about what your bona fides are as a coach in terms of who do you coach, what's your company called, and how long have you been a coach for?
Yeah, I started coaching back in 2016, and then Lift Run Perform was founded in 2017. And so I actually got my beginnings as a coach on the floor of a strength facility, and then later shifted into running coaching, mostly because I didn't believe it could be an actual job, and quickly came to find that it is a job and it actually could be a wonderful job. So been coaching a while and have had a lot of time to refine what I do, and obviously still learning every single day, but still loving it.
That's great. All right. So which workout do you want to start with?
I would say, so I typically give a lot of my athletes two workouts a week. It depends, you know, it depends on the level of the person, but often one of those workouts will be the main priority. So like there will be the bulk of the mileage in that workout. And I would say in my mind, it doesn't always have to be this way, but in my mind, a very good, maybe mid-season workout would either be mile repeats or K repeats, 1 kilometer. And in my head, that again, could be a long run workout, but often I'm prescribing that more mid-cycle. And it's a good, I would say, all speeds could hit it. And the prescription of the intensity depends on the athlete, their goal, and truly their fitness too. Like whether somebody can hit 1K repeats at something like 5 to 10K pacing, like it's a pretty intense workout, versus somebody who might be able to throw it in the middle of the cycle and hitting for more threshold intention. I think it speaks a lot to somebody's strength as an aerobic, as an endurance athlete. And it has a lot of versatility in terms of the intensity of what we're getting out of the workout.
Absolutely. All right. So let's go through a couple different variations that you would prescribe, either from a speed perspective, recovery perspective, or time on feet perspective, I guess. And all this would be dependent on the kind of athlete you're prescribing it to, right? Whether it's someone who's maybe 5K, 10K focused and you're going down that route, or maybe someone who's thinking about a little bit more of an endurance race and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, 5K, 10K, again, like if we're trying to hit K repeats, I love them being at intensity. They're very, very hard. And I say this to a lot of my athletes, like in my opinion, the hardest workout to achieve is K repeats, or honestly, even 800s when they're done at like, you know, 10K critical velocity at that type of intensity. To me, if somebody can nail a 1K repeat workout at 10K or critical velocity, and to kind of explain the term critical velocity, for a long time, people were running at around 10K pace, but then it is very much a hot recent term, I think. It's pretty obvious that you and me are not running our 10Ks at what the elites are running. And so born out of this became something called critical velocity, which is about what somebody could perform at a 30-minute race event. So yes, it is for our 10Ks, it's going to be a little bit faster at that pace. But often if I'm giving somebody a 1K repeat workout, depending on their fitness, I'm either going to prescribe it at 10K pace or critical velocity pace. Very rarely will I prescribe it at 5K. Like, again, if you think about it, if we're actually doing a workout, again, K repeats at interval or at 5K pace, that's a lot of intensity. So like that is something that I definitely prescribe very, very sparingly. And truly not many of the athletes can perform that I coach, or in general. So I think it's just smarter, and you get more bang for your buck, and you also step away from risking overrunning, because that's another thing too. Like, I think as runners, we think more is more, but that's not the case. And so keeping intensity controlled by just saying, all right, we really actually don't want to go faster than your 30-minute race pace. And that itself is pretty intense. So that's kind of like where I would go for somebody going on the faster end of things. And that's kind of later in season. And again, I would kind of prescribe the recovery parameters different based on where that athlete is. So perhaps early on in the cycle, I might prescribe walking recoveries. Later on in the cycle, I might give jogging recoveries, typically like 2-3 minutes. But again, like for some people, a 1K is going to take around 4 and change minutes. So sometimes it might warrant a 1-to-1 ratio, 1-to-1 work to rest ratio. So that part depends too. And then I think for those training for something like a half or a full, it's awesome to kind of create this like broken tempo effect with 1K intervals. And then too, with mile repeats, where you're having a really tiny rest, but that athlete is getting the confidence of running at a pace that's, you know, we'll define threshold pace at perhaps their like 60-minute race pace. And they just have a baby rest, and then they get back into it. And just that 30-second rest for something like that is enough to calm the head, calm the lungs, calm the heart, and then get back into it. And so for someone who might not yet be ready to do a 5-minute or 5-mile tempo, having, you know, 5x1 mile at threshold with baby rest is a really good confidence builder and good, a great stimulus for a longer event.
All right, let's talk about the first one you mentioned in terms of more 5K, 10K focused workout. You talked about the recovery periods being a little bit different, maybe early in the season, walking recoveries, maybe closer to race day, jogging recoveries. How many reps would you like to include for the amount of work done in that workout?
That's such an individual question, because it depends on how the intensity distribution is being laid out for that particular athlete. And then like, that's kind of what I was alluding to, like when I very first started talking, because when I lay out workouts for an athlete, you know, we've all heard like 80% easy, 20% hard, but that's so, so nuanced, and does not always apply, especially for someone coming back to running or the injured runner, postpartum runner, you know, like there's so much nuance to that type of intensity breakdown. But if the workout for the week is like, if that is my priority workout, I am like trying to really stack a lot of bricks within one workout. I mean, I would probably throw, and I can't say a number, but I would say like, I don't know, upwards to like 12%. Again, so like, let's say that this is an athlete who can handle 20 to 25% of quality work within their weekly framework, depending if it made sense for the cycle. I mean, I would throw up to 12, 15% of the weekly volume if that's the main workout. But again, like if we're hitting a pace that's really fast, I would not feel like I would never give somebody 10 to 15% of their weekly volume in 5K work in a workout like that. That's a lot. So I can't tell you how many numbers, but I can say like, if you want to do the percentage, I feel like whenever I'm making programs, I'm just constantly doing the percentage breakdown of like, what is the percentage at a certain intensity? So I would say it can be a pretty bulky workout, but then also the secondary workout for the week would need to be a bit more toned down, where there's only like, maybe I would pair something like 8x1K at like 10K pace, critical velocity. And I pair that with a weekend long run with just like 10 by a minute on, a minute off. So like, it's very clear that the main workout of the week or the main focus of the week is that big K workout. And then the weekend, yeah, we're still getting a big bang for a longer run. But it's a little bit quicker and you can't really stack up that much volume by doing something like a minute on, a minute off.
Right. And then for the, say, 5x1 mile at threshold, again, for that one, you did mention like maybe 5x1 mile, you kind of put a number on it. Sure. I don't know if that was just like a placeholder or in terms of like threshold repeats for the mile, how often or how do you think about it in terms of the amount per workout that you would give to people, again, depending on their experience and fitness level and pace and things like that?
Yeah, again, I would say probably like mid to late marathon cycle, I would feel comfortable prescribing something like that and even pairing that with a marathon long run. This is where that nuance of 20 to 25% of like that breakout of 80-20 gets kind of cloudy, mostly because, again, it depends on the person, but then also like marathon effort is and should not be nearly as intense as working at threshold intensity. So like I just have in my head like 4 to 5 mile tempo, because that's just such like a bread and butter workout, right? Like spending 30 to 40 minutes at tempo. I really think that like you could stack up to like around 50 minutes of threshold work, maybe not all at once, maybe breaking it up into 10 minute increments, but having threshold mid to late in something like a marathon cycle does make a lot of sense. But again, it is a lot more intense than marathon work. So I don't know, like if you're running 50 to 60 miles a week, your breakout of like miles at intensity for that week shouldn't really supersede like 13 to 15 miles within that week. So if you're an athlete who's truly at that mark and you can handle that much volume at intensity, a workout that just has 5 threshold miles, it's hard for sure. But then you also have like 8 to 10 more to play with on the weekend. So we could pair something like a 5 mile tempo or 5x1 mile repeats with, you know, 4x2 miles on the weekend or something at marathon effort. So it's very complementary to each other when it comes to a later stage of a endurance or marathon cycle.
And before we hopped on, you were referencing that you were just in someone's, one of your runners' calendars who's like run a 4:15, 4:30 marathoner, which a lot of people listening to this probably fall into the same bucket. So for someone like that, getting a workout at say 5x1 mile threshold is going to look a whole lot different than someone who's like a 40 minute 10K person getting that workout. So in terms of, so let's go to the you know, 9 to 10 minute per mile marathoner. Right. Mm-hmm. If they're getting that workout and it's kind of like a midweek workout, not like a weekend long run type vibe, would you frame it by 5x mile, or would there be some occasions where you'd be more like, you know, 4x10 minutes, or are there variations to what you already talked about in terms of that setup?
Yeah, I would be a lot more conducive to putting it just a time on feet parameter. So for people that I am coaching who's 4:30 marathoners, it's typically a mile repeat workout would be like 5x6 minutes or 5x6.5 minutes or something like that, where we don't care really. The body doesn't care about miles. It cares about the time. So that's how I would translate that to somebody who's a little bit at that end of the spectrum for the marathon. And then also too, just like dictating the amount that I'm prescribing to, that would change immensely too. Because typically if somebody is running a 4 or 4:30 or 5 or whatever hour marathon, the time it takes for them to accomplish a 30 mile week, a 35 mile week, that's a lot more time than somebody who's running a 3 hour marathon. So the approach to how that is dosed within their calendar really needs to change, because they cannot handle 5 of them. Just based on time, you know, like the time at intensity, like because those 30 to 35 miles that maybe their cycle is capping at takes a hell of a lot more time than it would take someone like me who's looking at like a 3 hour marathon. So that has to be taken into consideration too. It's not like a punishment that they would run less mileage within the workout. It just the ratio, because we always want to balance workout intensity with easy mileage in an appropriate balance and an appropriate ratio.
Yeah, that's really well said. And to say nothing of the fact that a lot of people you're working with are probably working professionals. You can't spend an hour and 45 minutes doing a midweek workout, even if they could handle the volume, right? We all have restraints, whether it's fitness, pace, or time in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple high mileage runners. And whenever we get to that point with training, I am pretty, like, I will put stuff on the calendar, but then always go back to them and say, can you do this? And do you want to do this? And then can you do this? Like, are you able to do a double? Or like, does it work in your life? Because it's not our job. We have to fit in running with everything else that we're doing. So truly, like, high mileage, I feel like we see a lot of this online, but it's not feasible. It's not always better. And there are other toggles that you can kind of play with before feeling like, oh my gosh, I have to run 70, 80 mile beats. But again, it works for some people. Some people do, I would say, like, thrive in that higher mileage zone. And my conversation with my high mileage athletes is always like, well, let's just make sure we're optimizing that mileage and you're not just like running in vain. Because sure, you can run 70, 80 miles, but like, are we actually optimizing like the space within those mileage? Because you don't need to be better at aerobicness. Like, that clearly is already a skill. What if we dropped you down a little bit, made this a little bit more intense? And I've had people come to me being like, yeah, I run 80 mile weeks. And I'm like, I'm sure you do, but let's make sure we're optimizing that. And sure enough, we get into a cycle and they're like, okay, I'm tired. Like, I'll just have them running 65 with a ton of quality effort. And they're like, yeah, I don't even want to go up to 70, 80. So that to me is more impactful from an adaptation perspective.
Yeah, that's really well said. All right, let's get into the second one. I think the other one you want to get into was more of a long run workout.
Yeah, I love oscillating miles. I think, and to explain that a little bit more, like within a long run, or even heck, it could be like a mid long run too. Like if you are running mid marathon cycle workouts up to 11 to 14 miles, taking a chunk of those middle miles and oscillating between pace, race pace. So this could be half marathon pace, marathon pace. It could even be like half marathon pace or marathon minus like 10 to 15. And then the recovery is another mile. And you, again, depending on where it's getting placed in the cycle and the fitness of that person, the recovery, and I put it in air quotes because that differs too. It could be a true easy pace recovery because that's what's needed. But I love when the recovery is more steady or moderate. So let's say somebody has a 6:30 half marathon pace. They're hitting 6:30 or even like 6:25 for the repeats. And then the recovery is at like 7:30. So it's like pace plus 60 or pace plus 75. So it's like the foot is off the gas a little bit for that recovery, but not completely. And you just get one big aerobic bomb. And it's hard. It's hard, but also such a confidence builder. And I find that when you are fit and you're running at pace, you know, when you first back off, when you first spend that first quarter mile of the recovery, it's a little bit of like sucking wind. But you surprise, like you do end up surprising yourself because when you get in that workout mode and you back off a little bit, I find that because there's this, I don't know if it's mental, physical, but like that switch off, especially if this is later in the season and you've got pretty solid fitness at this point, it's almost pretty natural to run steady at that point. And then what you have is a great big long run, a lot of work, a lot of aerobic development, and a lot of practice of oscillating between what you hope to see on race day and then what's not. And it's giving you perspective of patience. So it's a really good sample of like how your body might react within pacing a particular day. And this is helpful for someone running a hilly workout or a hilly goal race, because that's another part of it too. Like, I don't like people pace hawking, but at the same time, understanding how your body feels at a particular pace is a really good practice and something that like we all can get better at.
And this seems like the kind of workout where it really helps you dial into what a race effort feels like, right? Because you have to keep getting back to it, right? It's not like, hey, we're doing, say, half marathon effort for 30 straight minutes where you can just kind of set it and forget it. And while it might get hard, you can just kind of try to keep repeating the same motion. You're kind of going back to it every, you know, 6 to 8 minutes where you really have to learn how to dial that in.
Right. It's also helpful to, I think, to like help with fueling, practice fueling, because it is like we have to fuel in our long runs. And often I'm hearing people once they get, if they're haven't been practicing often, when they get to these big bulky marathon workouts, they're like, I can't take in this much fuel. I'm running too fast. My stomach is off. But when we have a workout like this, it creates a lot of space to get fuel in. And it is like, it, you absolutely have to take advantage of working the stomach and training the stomach to take in fuel. Now, is it preferable to train the stomach while you're at race pace? For sure. But especially if you are struggling in getting up to these like high carb numbers that, you know, the evidence is now suggesting, if you do an oscillation workout where your tummy has a little bit of time to settle in between each rep, it's a helpful way of buffering that discomfort that somebody might be struggling with when it comes to intaking more carbs.
Beyond just like a time point that you can give an athlete, right? You say, hey, I want your, you know, again, in quotes, recovery paces to be at, say, 9:15 or whatever time, whatever pace you want to set. How do you talk to them if you're just trying to classify it as an effort level, especially if it's, say, on rolling terrain or something like that, where you really don't want them, again, just watching their watch the whole time, but it's also this ephemeral area, like between easy and marathon?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the biggest word I use for coaching is smooth. I'm always saying smooth and controlled and butter, like all of these like juicy, like this should feel a little uncomfortable, but not to the point of like, again, redlining or like if somebody was next to you, you still could get out a couple sentences. Now, are we going to want to sit here and have this flowing conversation like we're having? No, but you still can get things out. So I think if like that's a great point, especially on hills, like we don't want to overcook a workout like this. And I think if somebody is getting too wrapped up in a pace, or maybe they're training for paces beyond their means and not really realizing it, I think having the ability to shut the ego down a little bit and just focus on being smooth and controlled and, you know, maybe even saying something like, that was tough, but attainable. And that's okay too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's put it into, if you could just like, again, not this is going to relate to everybody at all times, but maybe without giving names, just like provide like an anecdote of like maybe one or two times you put this workout into someone's schedule, what it looked like and kind of where, like what that athlete was up to, right? So again, this isn't going to apply to everybody. So much of this is context dependent, which is really nice that we can kind of set the context, right? So you can think of someone who may have gotten this workout in the past, or two people who are at varying or at different stages in their athletic journey. How did those workouts look, and at what point did they come in their cycle in relation to whatever race day they were going to have?
I see this as a workout, it doesn't necessarily need to be like the last final workout, but I feel like, you know, it's a bulky workout and being pretty fit is important leading into it. So I would, to put a number on how many weeks out, I don't know, maybe we want to say like at the 6-5 week mark. And I also consider the warm-up time, the duration of warm-up to be impactful. So if this is somebody who is late in the season, maybe they are at that 6-5 week out from a marathon, they want to have a longer warm-up that's maybe like 4, 5, up to 6 miles and then get into something like this. That is, that's a pretty massive effort. If you're warming up for a solid 30 to 45 minutes and then you get into 8 miles although I would say 8 miles is not a ton of work, because truly that's just 4 at race pace. But again, that's just like an example. Like if I'm running into somebody's calendar, I'm A, considering the amount that they're doing in a warm-up, and then B, considering how much time they have like in their stress bucket for putting intensity out. So like I would say, like if this is earlier in the cycle, throwing something like 8 miles where you're oscillating between race pace and off makes sense. But then if you're later in a cycle, even up to like 12 miles where you're oscillating, where now you're getting up to 6 miles of speed work, but then another 6 is at steady, like that's a big day. And I like often for a lot of athletes to practice race pace. Again, this depends on the person. But like, I would say like up to 10, maybe 14 miles at marathon pace. This is specific to the marathon. And so I mean, prescribing all of that within an oscillation workout is just kind of impossible. So that's why I don't say like this shouldn't be your last workout, because I do see somebody's last marathon workout as being like the big bomb of marathon miles before you taper. So I think it's appropriate to step it up a little bit in the cycle where somebody is just kind of tapping into more and more marathon exposure. I would say like usually prescribing 8 all the way up to 12 miles where you're oscillating back and forth. And then depending on where that person is for their long run of the week, obviously buffering it around a warm up and a cool down. And then also considering if you want to do this on fatigue legs and increasing that warm up length, or if you want to just hop into the workout after just a 2 or 3 mile warm up. That depends on the situation too.
Yeah, and certainly also dependent on, like you mentioned before, how many oscillating miles you're going to do, right? If you're going to be doing, you know, 10 to 12 oscillating miles, it's hard to program that into like the back half of a workout, unless like you're someone who can really go long.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not really prescribing anything much longer. I mean, I just chatted with my coach about prescription of longest long run because I was curious to get his take on it. Personally, I for a long time was programming a lot of people to always hitting 3 hours as their long run. But I'm finding myself coaching more and more fast people. And then personally found myself capping at a 2:30 long run when I ran a marathon back in December. So I was like, wait, maybe you don't have to run that 3 hour long run. This is like what I meant when I said earlier, like always learning, always growing. I do think that there is that whole like you must run 3 hour or you must run 20 plus miles, and I don't know. I don't necessarily think that's true.
Yeah, so much context there, that's for sure. Because usually that long run isn't independent of what's happening before or after that day, right? It depends. Like, hey, if you're tapered into your long run and then you take a big and take a rest day the day after, that long run may look very different than if you're running 8 miles the day before and then 10 miles the day after.
Sure, yeah, and just overall cumulative fatigue. People forget that. I mean, these long runs are really sexy, but cumulative fatigue is actually what runs the marathon. It's not just one singular or even multiple long runs.
Well said. Mary, thank you so much for coming on and being, I guess, the guinea pig for this series. We really appreciate it. That is for sure. If people want to learn more about you and Lift, Run, Perform, where should they go?
Online. I personally am It's a Marathon and the business is Lift, Run, Perform. And if you want to reach out and ask questions, feel free to shoot me a DM, though I will say, if you really want a response, shoot Lift, Run, Perform a DM. My girls on that account are much more responsive than I am.
There you go. All right, Mary, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Rambling Runner Podcast. Go check out ASICS, our presenting sponsor, at ASICS.com today. Also, are you in the market for a coach? I don't know if you know this. I am a coach, so I've been working with amateur runners for over 5 years now as part of McCurdy Trained, the biggest run coaching service in America, and I love doing it. It really is one of the highlights of my day. I love working with amateur athletes who are working to get better and balancing running with a crazy schedule or looking to get the most out of their running. They feel like you have potential, but you're just not sure what to do. That's exactly where I can step in. Also, for people who maybe need just someone to like be accountable to. That's a big one. That's one for me. That's why I like having a running coach, someone I can be accountable to. Also, a lot of athletes that I work with are kind of maybe on the type A end of the spectrum, and it's great for them to have a counterbalance. And I think that that's something that I can provide for them as someone who can allow them to just relax, enjoy their running, and not obsess over it. So if that is something that you're interested in, you can always email me at ramblingrunnerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can always shoot me a message on Instagram, rambling_runner. Thank you so much for listening, and happy running.